Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Well, welcome to Dare to Dream, where the extraordinary is the conversation and where we open a stargate so we can make this information very useful and irresistible. What if 2026 is not just another year, but it's actually the moment when humanity steps into the galactic community and conversation? Today, Daryl Anka, a guest who's been on the show many times before, is going to join us with the latest information from Bashar, and it's going to be revealing why disclosure is unfolding now. Why now? How open contact actually happens, and what you can do to embody this next chapter for humanity, plus other things like inner earth, deep oceans, and wherever this conversation takes us. If you want to reach him, you can reach him at bashar.org, and we'll have all of Daryl's links in the show note in the show's description below. And with that, I invite Daryl Anka back to Dare to Dream. It's so great to have you here again. It's time.
It's wonderful to be here again. Thank you for having me. Nice to see you again, Debbie.
Yeah. So there's so much to unfold. This is a conversation you and I started having before people were having this conversation or Bashar was revealing this information. You and I had it, I think it was about 4 years ago, when I interviewed you for a project and you were giving out dates. Now, at the time, you were saying there is about a 30-year possibility. But as the years have gone on, now we're talking 2026, 2027 is the inception. So does that mean that we have switched our collective timeline to allow this knowing contact, obvious contact to start happening?
Well, not so much. This has been in the works for some time. That hasn't changed. The 30-year idea is a window of a total resetting of humanity going in a different direction for their evolution, being more united, being more creative, more peaceful, more loving. So we're looking at the span between 2020 and 2050 as the three-decade reset of humanity. There are markers and events within that 30-year window, such as 26, now the year of disclosure, 2027, the potential year of open contact. So this has been coming about for quite some time. We now have arrived at the place where we're starting to see those markers. So as Bashar has explained, this is now the year of disclosure. And it doesn't even just mean the year of disclosure for UFO information, which we're seeing more of because we're having congressional hearings about UFOs and UAPs now, whistleblowers coming forth who've been involved in some of the programs that deal with the secret of the UFOs and the aliens and reverse engineering and all that kind of stuff. So not only that information, but he's basically saying it's the year of disclosure of bringing to light hidden secrets that affect humanity. And I think we're also seeing that taking place now with all of the information coming out, where things that have been secret are now being exposed in different kinds of areas of our society. So this is really quite evident that a lot of things that have been hidden for quite some time are now coming into light. So we're seeing that acceleration. And ideally, again, yes, there's a little bit of give and take in the timing, but ideally it will all culminate sometime in 2027 as true public open contact, where people are aware that ETs exist, and that would be the beginning of our society and their society becoming more integrated.
Beautiful. Does 3i Atlas have anything to do with this?
Only in the sense, as Bashar has explained, it is a comet. It is not a spaceship, but it is the third object we have noticed that comes from outside of our solar system. The fact that we're noticing that, and it's bringing our attention to the idea that things can come into our solar system from interstellar space, is a way of preparing us to get used to the idea that other things like ETs can come into our system from interstellar space. So it's something that we've collectively set up to start preparing us by allowing us to notice when things are coming from outside of our solar system. So even though it's not itself a ET spaceship, it is giving us more and more practice of going, oh, this comes from somewhere else. It's coming from outside our system. And that gets us used to that idea eventually that it will eventually be something having to do with other civilizations that come from outside our system.
Makes so much sense, and that's intuitively exactly what I got from it. Beautiful. You mentioned that Bashar has spoken about protections in place now for military and insiders to come forward. Are these protections human-generated, governmental, or are they guided by non-human intelligence or a buffet of all?
Well, a mix of all. But in general, it is being offered by the government, by the Congress, having these whistleblowers speak. They're talking about putting laws into effect that will protect whistleblowers, that will make sure that military people that have come forth that have had UFO encounters are not going to be ostracized, are not going to have their careers ruined, are not going to be ridiculed anymore on this subject, on this topic. So it's about putting safeguards and laws into place that will allow more people who are involved in these secret programs, more people in the military who have had UFO encounters to come forth safely and knowing it's not going to affect their lives negatively. To speak about these things publicly so that the public can know we are, in fact, evolving toward recognizing that ETs are here, that we're going to ultimately have open contact.
Why does Bashar say that disclosure goes far beyond UFOs? And what aspects of reality are actually being revealed alongside it?
Well, the idea is we're at the end of a cycle and a beginning of a new cycle. And you have to kind of clean your attic out. You have to get everything out on the table so that people know where everything stands, so that they have no doubt about what represents a vibrational energy we don't prefer. And that helps clarify what vibrational energy we do prefer. For how the world needs to operate in the future, especially if we're going to have open contact. We need to become very transparent, very open, very honest. We need to stop burying these secrets. We need to stop behaving in ways that create these secrets because it only lowers our vibration to hold on to things that are not to the benefit of our society or individuals within it. We have to let go of the fear-based beliefs and the fear-based ideas and concepts that cause people to do things in secret that are not beneficial for them, that are harmful to them and to others. We need to get all of this up and out of our system so that we can become truly the souls that we are more clearly, more transparently, more honestly, more openly. Because when ETs do come, they're going to see right through us. And they have these telepathic abilities to know exactly what we're holding on to, what we're hiding. And holding on to these kinds of things that are harmful in our society doesn't make us vibrationally compatible with interacting with higher vibrational entities, such as some of these ETs. So it's really going to benefit the evolution of humanity to be able to interact with them. So we kind of have to clean the cobwebs out of our attic and really organize things within ourselves so that we can meet them face to face on a level playing field, that we can really present ourselves as the souls that we are, as the aspects of creation that we are, because that's what they see within us. We have to start seeing that within ourselves, and we have to start behaving as if we understand that that's what we are.
Yes, absolutely. If there are people who are listening and they want to consciously participate in disclosure, but not passively wait or watch it, what is the single most important daily practice that Bashar recommends that we can do to be in this vibrational alignment? I know often he speaks about, following our greatest joy or excitement. And is there something else that we can consciously do to participate in disclosure?
Well, absolutely. I mean, aside from following the formula so that we're raising our vibration to make us more vibrationally and energetically compatible with ETs who do operate on a higher vibrational level, we can certainly do very practical things like literally contacting our representatives in government and saying, look, we want this. We want more exposure. We want these people, these whistleblowers, these military people that have had these encounters, to be able to come forward safely and talk about this. We want this information out. So you can certainly contact your representatives. You can certainly show up peacefully to demonstrate that it's time for this information to stop being secret, to come out. I understand there may be little aspects of it that are engaged with national security, and I'm not talking about exposing things like that, but I'm talking about a lot of information that, in a sense, people kind of already know about, but the government or the organizations that are controlling this information just aren't admitting, even though, in a sense, everyone already suspects these things to be true, and the whistleblowers have said as much. So we need to have that kind of transparency, and anything that we can do to communicate with the Pentagon, the military, with the government officials that represent us, and encourage them lovingly and peacefully to say, look, we're ready for this. We need to have this stuff out. Whatever is not literally an issue of national security, truly, then let us know about it. Bring it out. They can engage with our society that way.
Great. So important to use your time and energy. A lot of people listening to this will do that energetically, but to understand also action-wise as a 3D human, you can take action to contact your representatives and express this. And that is an amazing idea. So
It
we're going
is
to go, right?
done that way because we're physical beings. So it's not just about the energy that's helpful. But you have to commit by showing the behavior that allows you to also express it in the world the way you would if the world was already the way you preferred it to be.
Yeah, agreed. Beautiful idea and great way to take action right now. And folks, we're going to go a little deeper into this work. I've got something special for you if you would like to gain access to find out your galactic history, your ancestry from the cosmos. You can find out what star seed, it's usually a plural, star seeds you have borne. And I've got a video and a report for you to discover your galactic origins. It tells us a lot about ourselves, our inception. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. That's Debbie with an I and Dachinger with a C. So it's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. And both Daryl Enka and myself are speaking at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles coming up February 20th through the 23rd. Join us. Daryl is presenting a workshop on Monday. He'll say a little bit more about this later, and I believe also on Sunday. He does channel Bashar. I know these get sold out. So go ahead and buy your tickets now. Go to debbiedashinger.com/CLE for Conscious Life Expo. Also, I am speaking aboard the Mystery School at Sea cruise going to Greece and Turkey, and that's in March 2026. You can book your cabin, and you'll also see Laura Eisenhower, Debbie Solaris, Geraldina Roscoe, myself, Neil Garr, so many other amazing people. And we'll be able to connect throughout the cruise. Go to mysteryschoolatsea.com and be sure to use my name under referral. If this conversation finally means something to you, go ahead and like, subscribe to the video. Your support by subscribing, by liking, by commenting means so much. And we get to reach way more star seeds and light workers around the globe. So thank you in advance for supporting us. All right, Daryl, I want to ask a question because I know in my heart what the answer is. And I have been spending time correcting this out here because I keep hearing people say over and over this misnomer, reptilians are bad, all grays are bad. It seems to be a really popular way of thinking. Or if somebody in government is doing something they don't like, they're a reptilian, right? And so I don't understand that to be at all the truth because I understand within species, there's a plethora of beings. And so I'd love you to address that.
Yeah. The reptilians are a species. I understand that some of them may not necessarily have humanity's best interests at heart, but it's probably more an issue of they just don't relate to us. Now, again, any comment that I'm making here does not necessarily apply to the entire species. There are individuals within all of these species, just like there are in humanity, and they can have slightly different agendas. There are also different types of gray beings. You can't necessarily lump them into one category. So they may also have different agendas, and they come from different sources. So it's more a matter of understanding that from the soul level of our being, we have made agreements on a soul level, on a spirit level, before our lives, before our incarnations, to encounter these beings, to work with these beings for the purpose of evolving humanity forward, and also for benefits to these beings as well. Now, I understand that some people have had tough encounters with some of these beings. I think the vast majority of what appears to be a challenging encounter has to do with the fact that we haven't been properly prepared to interact with beings like this. It may have to do with certain qualities that these beings also possess. For example, if we're encountering a reptilian being, and yes, I agree, there's no truth that anyone we disagree with within government is a reptilian being. No, that's a conspiracy theory. I don't think there's any basis in truth in that. There are some interactions going on with reptilian beings in secret for a variety of reasons between certain officials and their species and other species as well. But energetically, we have to remember that physically, we are mammalian beings. When a mammal encounters something it perceives as having reptilian energy, a mammal will kind of get activated in a certain part of the brain that goes into fight or flight, into survival mode, because we have been genetically engineered, in a sense, to react from a mammal to a reptile, facing a reptile, as if we're going to get eaten by the reptile, because that's usually what happens in nature. So I think a lot of the fear that's come out of encounters that may have happened between humans and reptilians is that it triggers in us that survival mode, our fear reaction, and makes it magnify in a very weird way the idea that they mean us harm, when in fact they really might just not care that much about us, maybe even because of our natural reaction to them where we're afraid of them. And I can see how maybe to them that might seem kind of offensive. Nevertheless, I don't think that a lot of the stories about the negativity that they're supposed to possess are really accurate. I think it has a lot more to do, maybe barring certain rare exceptions, because again, everyone's an individual, even in the reptilian society and even in the gray societies. Barring rare instances where there might have been a misunderstanding or what appeared to someone to be a little bit more of an aggression or something like that. I think that the reasons these things are being done, the abductions and so on and so forth, has a lot to do with the preservation of our species, the preservation of their species in certain ways. And I think just because of the approach that's taken, especially, let's say, in the grays, where they might exhibit a hive mind and not necessarily show a lot of emotionality. That makes us again feel like this is being done against our will, that they're cold, that they're heartless. It's just that they operate in a very different way than we do. And it's sort of equivalent to the idea of taking a small child to the doctor for their own benefit, where the child might be screaming and kicking and be afraid of the doctor. But as a parent, you know, it might be necessary for that child to receive the shots or medications or what's going on for their benefit. There's a lot of analogies that can be made here, a lot of misunderstandings that happen in these encounters. Again, I'm not trying to dismiss anyone's challenge or difficulty they may have in these encounters. I understand that that goes on, but I think most of the reason why that happens is we simply haven't been properly prepared to understand that we have relations with these beings and that we have made soul agreements with these beings for the purpose of benefiting humanity. We need to be able to see the bigger picture and we need to be able to learn what's really going on so that we can participate on our own terms, so that we don't have to be afraid, so that we don't feel fear with what happens and how we encounter these beings, because they come from a different reality, a different vibrational level. And that can cause disruption within us as well. Because when we're exposed to higher vibrational frequencies, it can feel like we're about to die. It can feel like we're being annihilated because those vibrational frequencies are akin to the spirit world, akin to the frequency of the spirit world. And anytime we're exposed to the idea of the spirit world, if we're not really aware of ourselves, it can feel like we're about to die. And that can cause a survival reaction within us as well. So a lot of this is biological, a lot of it is energetic, a lot of it is misunderstanding. Again, I'm sure there may be some exceptions just because we're all individuals. But again, I think that the bigger picture is that we have made agreements for these things to happen, to encounter these beings. And when open contact occurs, we will be given a lot more information that I think will help us absorb, understand, and mitigate a lot of the, apparently, quote unquote, negative experiences that people have had with beings like that. So I think it's a matter of really being educated to what's really going on that will help allay a lot of our fears.
A really interesting explanation, and I understand that a lot of the grays, in particular, why there were the abductions as such a rapid occasion that they were taking place was to keep their species going because they had genetically re-engineered themselves to lose their emotions, and they found that in negating their emotions that they were having trouble having bearing children and keeping their species going. And part of what was going on, I also know they've done a lot of hybrid programs, but part of what was going on with humans was for the children to also to start to bring back the emotions. And you mentioned that it helps humanity. Now that's very interesting because I've never heard that before. How did these help, how do these help humanity?
Well, look at what Bashar is doing. Bashar's civilization is a product of the hybridization program. They are
Right?
hybrid.
And they're
And the
part gray, right?
they're half gray, half Earth human. So the information that Bashar and others like him are helping us with prevents us from going down the same road that the Greys went down when they destroyed their reality and had to mutate into what we now see them to be in order to survive. So, because they lost the ability to procreate, they had to find viable human DNA that still existed somewhere in some parallel world like ours, so they could add their DNA to that DNA, to our DNA, and create hybrids that would perpetuate their species, but also letting the hybrids instruct us how to avoid the pitfalls that the gray civilization went through. So they're helping us to evolve without going through the damage that the grays went through that turned them into what they are. Because from Bashar's perspective, they actually used to be more like humans in a parallel reality. And having destroyed their environment, having been too focused on intellect, having not really connected to the idea of nature, we're seeing a lot of that on our planet where we're destroying nature, destroying the environment. And if we reach a tipping point like the Greys ultimately did, then we might have to experience the same thing of having to live underground, having to experience a toxic environment, having to mutate ourselves genetically in order to survive in that environment until such time as we could create something like hybrids that would perhaps allow our species to continue. They're trying to help us avoid going down that same path.
Beautiful. Also, a lot of people's attention is on the cosmos, everything that's out there potentially, but we have a lot of species here. And I'm very fascinated by inner Earth, for want of a better word, and all the extra dimensional or other terrestrial beings that live inside the Earth. Can you elaborate about that? I understand hundreds, maybe thousands of species are there.
Well, okay. Bashar takes exception to using the term inner earth because it causes confusion in the sense that people actually think the earth is physically hollow. He's saying that's not the case. What we perceive as inside the earth is actually some people get shifted to a different dimension. And because they may get shifted by accidentally walking through portals or something like that, that might be inside tunnels or caves inside the earth, they think that where they wind up is actually still physically inside the planet, when in fact they've been shifted to another reality altogether. And then they may come back by going through that portal and emerging from the tunnel or the cave they literally did physically go into. But where they wound up was not physically inside the earth. So inner earth really is a reference to the idea of other dimensions that the earth may be connected to through portals, through gateways, and things like that. That sometimes, now and then, on rare occasions, a person may find themselves accidentally crossing into. And this has given rise to this whole concept that, oh, there's all sorts of hollow spaces in the earth and there's other civilizations in there. No, not physically. You are going to another dimension to experience those things. But because you may have entered that portal by going into a cave or a tunnel in the earth, you think you're still physically in the earth when you're not.
Got it. Thank you. That's perfect because, of course, Edmund Halley in 1749, his idea, and I just think he was a genius before his time, was that it was an inner earth, but concentric circles with their own suns and magnetic poles. So that's not so. But he was onto something. And then, of course, Jules Verne was probably a little closer with his journey to the inside of the earth, where he figured out. There were portals like volcanoes and so forth. But you're saying these are energetically other places, but they can be accessed through portals, through some space that transports us from here on Terra to another dimension.
I think we need to start understanding that the Earth and probably every planet in the universe are connected by a network of portals. It's part of the way the universe is constructed. It's almost like the fabric of space-time is woven by wormholes and portals that can transport you to other places. UFOs use them all the time. They know how to activate them, how to use them. On Earth, we haven't arrived at that science understanding yet, but there can be times when these portals that are naturally there are accidentally entered. We may be just of the right frequency at that particular moment to pass through them, and then we wind up in another reality, in another dimension, and we think we're still inside the Earth, and we're not at all. Because again, we haven't yet learned how to map where these portals are, where these wormholes are, as a natural phenomenon in the universe. So, yeah, it's not what's happening literally physically in the Earth, but it is capable of transporting people to other places that we think are inside the Earth. It's just being inside the Earth is a metaphor. It's inner Earth is a metaphor, not a physical literalness.
Beautiful. What about also extraterrestrial species who live within our oceans? How deep really are our oceans, and what species are there and why?
Well, again, just like there are bases underground on land, there are bases underground in the ocean, because a lot of extraterrestrials have the technology to construct bases under the ocean floor, because certainly there's most likely absolutely no possibility that we're going to ever come across them or stumble onto them. There are a few that are on land, and people have begun to say, oh, there's an underground ET base in like Dulce, and maybe at Area 51, and maybe on the island off of, Catalina or something like that, or wherever. But if the bases are literally under the ocean floor, it's very unlikely we're ever going to stumble across them. So that's a way that the ETs have of remaining secret and protecting themselves until such time as they expose themselves and introduce themselves openly and publicly and say, yeah, we've got bases here, we've got bases there. They've got bases underground on the moon, on Mars, throughout the solar system. So it's just, I think, the most efficient way for them to come and go and do their business without necessarily disturbing us too much. We've seen, UFOs rising from the oceans and things like that. That's just an indication that they're simply leaving an underground base that happens to be under the ocean floor.
Oh, interesting. So curious, if do they breathe water? Are they amphibious, aquatic?
No. There are some ETs that may be amphibious, but this has nothing to do with living in the water. These UFOs go into entrances that are in underground, under the ocean floor. They're not living in the water.
Amazing. Do extraterrestrial species, and this is a massive generalized question because there's so many species, I think it's not comprehensible. But from what you understand through Bashar, do they view that there's a God, a source, an ultimate consciousness that most species adhere to?
Well, yes, most advanced species, I think, are aware that there is what they refer to as source or all that is. They're looking at existence itself as a self-aware consciousness, that we're all made of it. It's just like they understand that everything is a product and a reflection of it. They don't compartmentalize it down into what humans do when they create a kind of personalized concept of God, goddess, or whatever. From the ET's point of view, it's like any representation at all is part of it, because you can't think of anything that's outside of it. So it doesn't really matter, and it doesn't really care what we call it or how we represent it, because we can't represent something that is not it, because everything is made of it. So, when people say, oh, God is omnipresent, it's everywhere. Well, a lot of people don't really use that word in the truest meaning and the truest definition of that word, because if you just stop to think about it for 1 second, something can only be literally everywhere if it is everything that is, because then there's no thing, no space, no nothing that isn't it. And that's the only way it can actually be everywhere or omnipresent, is if it actually is everything in creation. So euphemistically, then that you could say we're all made of God. We're all made of Source. We are all the different ways that Source has of experiencing its own reflections so that it can know itself. So, yes, most ETs look at it simply as Source, all that is, or existence itself. Consciousness, self-awareness is one of its qualities. We exhibit that quality of self-awareness and consciousness. Everything in its own way is consciousness, even if we don't recognize it as such, because it may have a different expression of consciousness, a different expression of self-awareness. And therefore, we may not know that it is self-aware or conscious because it's an alien form of that consciousness that we can't relate to. Nevertheless, we're all made from the same thing.
I know that you've spoken about parallel Earths and split timelines. Is disclosure a single global event, or are we witnessing different versions of disclosure unfolding across parallel collective realities? How does that work?
Well, I don't want to get into, multidimensional physics here, but you can both say, well, look, we have a single timeline in which we have decided that disclosure and open contact is going to be part of that timeline. You can also say any one single timeline may actually be composed of many different events that could be connected to many different timelines. It's like saying, all right, I have three different versions of the same movie, and there are slight differences in every version of those three movies, even though they're telling the same story, so to speak. And look at the three film strips and all the frames on those film strips. Well, we may be experiencing the frames of film strip A up to a certain point, but then what if we collectively decide that what we're going to experience is something that's on film strip B because it's slightly different? So we are making a shift. We are including, we are jumping, in a sense, to film strip B all of a sudden, a parallel film strip. But at the same time, from another point of view, you could say, well, but the three frames on film strip A and the two frames on film strip B and the five frames on film strip C are still its own film strip, its own timeline, its own single timeline. It doesn't really matter. And we don't need to get too caught up in the fact that this is just a convenient way of describing that every single thing, every single possibility, all exists simultaneously. And we make decisions to experience different aspects of that as we go through what life we have laid out. And all of those life paths are intertwined in a very complex tapestry. So I don't want people to necessarily get too focused on the literalness of that. What they need to understand mostly is that there are concepts that all exist, that are all here all at once, and we have the ability, based on our choices and what we've laid out as souls on our path in this life, to do things in certain ways and in a variety of ways to learn the lessons that we've agreed to learn. It could be done on this way, it could be done that way, as long as we learn the same lesson that we originally agreed to learn. So it's just a matter of drawing from that pool, from that pot of all possibilities, what works best. And you could say that that means we're shifting here and shifting there and shifting here. But overall, we're still experiencing things along the one timeline we established, the timeline being a representation of the soul saying, I want to learn this lesson and this lesson and this lesson and this lesson. It's all about the lessons. What challenges do I need to choose that will give me the lesson I need to learn the best? Is it challenge A? Is it challenge B? Is it challenge C? We have some variety, some wherewithal in shifting to the different possibilities or probabilities that are all available to us, as long as it fits the lessons that we put on our true timeline, we can use multiple variable probabilities to learn those lessons to fit that timeline, even though we may be plucking those challenges from what you would call different timelines. I hope that explains it. It can get a little bit complex, but that's really the way to look at it. It's sort of this and that, not this or that.
Totally track that 100%. I was thinking that's a fascinating idea. I like that so much because you're including the part of whatever our soul decided to come here and learn and grow by, that
Right.
it doesn't ameliorate that. It's that should be included and wherever we're going directionally, whatever we're choosing.
Right.
That's amazing. And so I want to ask you then about the quantum. And I know you don't want to go into that too much, but I heard this explanation yesterday, and somebody was saying their explanation of, I think they said quantum physics. And what they were saying was, it is the space that is a reflection of you. And so it's like this creation space that's a reflection of you, your beliefs, etc. And I never felt that. I always thought the quantum is a field of no thing, of absolutely nothing. And into that space of nothing, I can place what I prefer. And from there, or I guess people place what they don't prefer. It depends. But either way, it gets created, it becomes a creation. Can you speak a little bit to that? And also, if there is a difference between this quantum field and also what they're talking a lot about right now, which is this plasma light field, which also seems to be an energy of creation.
Yeah, okay, we're conflating some different things here into one thing. This may require a little bit of a rearrangement of terminology. The field you're talking, and again, we have to come from it as not this or that, but this and that, because there are different ways to look at it. It's a holographic structure. On one hand, you could say the quantum field is a field of nothing into which we put something that is then created. That's a way of saying it. It's not necessarily a description of what's mechanically happening. You could also say it's a field of everything, and therefore, holographically, we're plucking out of that whatever aligns with what it is we need to experience. So it's not even so much that we're quote unquote creating the thing. We are creating an experience of the thing that may already be there as a choice out of the myriad of things, the infinite number of things that are there to choose from, or whatever the finite amount of things are that are relevant for our life path out of the infinity. It gets a little sketchy because terminology can mean different things to different people. And it can be expressed in any number of different ways. The idea in quantum physics, as far as I understand it, is that the observer, as soon as the observation is made, creates the observed, or generates or pulls the observed into focus. Because the observed thing is already there as a potentiality. And whatever we are, whatever state we're in, and whatever, therefore, from that state, observation we choose to make pulls out or focuses what we then observe, brings it into being, brings it into our observational focus, makes it real for us, manifests it. So all the probabilities are there, but it's our focus. Our vibrational frequency that makes it visible to us. So, in a sense, you could say that field is nothing, and you can say that that field contains everything simultaneously because it doesn't feel like anything until we observe it from the state of being we're in and brings it into focus and makes it manifest. It's just focusing on a certain point of that field holographically that reveals it to us, that makes it visible to us. Does that help?
Beautiful. Yeah, it's like a closet of costumes, a closet of possibilities. That's what I'm seeing as you express all of this, this nothing, this everything. What fun, to let your kid like nature out and like, what would you like to be or experience next and go into that everything and pull that out. And as you were saying, focus on it until it becomes real. How
Right,
does
and
it get any better?
becoming real simply means it's now within our particular purview. It's now within the range of our senses. It doesn't mean it wasn't real before that. It just wasn't manifest in the range of our senses until we made it so, till we focused on it.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
We are
because
very
99.9% of our reality is invisible to us until we focus on something. It's all around us all the time. Most of it's just invisible.
Yeah, that's I hope everybody's letting that one in, because I did. We as humans tend to externalize authority, whether it's to the government, whether it's to saviors, whether it's to star beings. How does Bashar see the balance between guidance and sovereignty playing out as disclosure accelerates?
Well, again, he's constantly reminding us that, they're no better than we are. We're all equals in our souls. Yes, different civilizations are at different points in their learning, in their evolution. We're all learning different lessons. But we have to start looking at ourselves the way they see us. And the way they see us is you are an equal soul to any other being in creation. You may have decided to go to the Earth University rather than the Pleiadian University this time, or whatever, and you're learning the lessons that go along with the Earth University. So you are attempting to go through the different range of lessons and classes, all the way from kindergarten all the way up to getting your PhD and graduating with a master's degree. So it's just at what point you're at, what lessons you want to learn that your soul has chosen by going to the Earth school, as opposed to going to another school, which we've also probably always done. So it's just a matter of this time we're in the Earth school right here. So that's the lessons we're going to learn is what's the Earth all about and what are we going to learn and how are we going to grow as a soul by going through the Earth school, as opposed to going through another kind of school. And we still, when we're done with the Earth school, have a choice to go to other schools too. It never ends. So we're all
Yeah.
equal in their eyes in that sense. We're all students. We're all learning. We're all growing. We're all teaching.
Do you feel like as you go on and do the work that you're doing, that you are merging with Bashar, that
I'm becoming
there's
more my version of him rather than say I'm merging. I am taking on a more of a vibration that is similar to his. It doesn't erase me as an individual. I don't lose my individuality, but I become more like a version of him here.
Do you feel like that is ways of thinking, ways of being, maybe even ways of looking?
Absolutely. And rather than say the word merging, I would use the word mirroring as a more accurate representation. I am mirroring the vibration of what I deem Bashar to be, because not only because it works for my life, but in seeing things in the way that he sees them, it makes the idea of our reality much more transparent to me in terms of why things happen and how they happen and for what purpose they happen. And by sharing that information and living that life, I become more of a living example to others of how they could also choose to do that too and let their lives be more creative, more joyful, more abundant, more whatever that they would prefer it to be. So that's really kind of the whole point is to be our best selves, be our true soul selves, because on that level, we're all equal, equal to each other, equal to the extraterrestrials, equal to every other being in creation.
Do you have other Bashar incarnation family here? I know you've got April, who in that other life is a daughter. And I'm just curious if there are others who
I'm
surround you in
sure
that
there
way.
probably are, but I have not been made aware of who they may be.
What about permission slips? I know Bashar talks a lot about permission slips as tools rather than as truths. At
Yeah.
this stage of human evolution, are there permission slips that are becoming obsolete, that are no longer necessary, even within spiritual or metaphysical communities?
Well, yeah, but I think that's a personal choice. It's a subjective choice. And it depends upon the amount of experience that someone may have in earth incarnations. I mean, remember, the definition of an old soul or a new soul has nothing to do with the age of the soul itself. All souls are the same age. They're internal, they're infinite. It has to do with how much experience do you have in a particular reality. So let's say a person that has had 1,000 incarnations on earth compared to a person that has only had 5 incarnations on earth, you would call the person with 1,000 incarnations an old soul. It doesn't mean their soul is literally older than the new soul. It just means that the new soul hasn't had as many experiences in this particular reality that the old soul has. So the old soul is more experienced. And the old soul may then not need as many permission slips to recognize who they are. They realize that they are the permission slip, and whatever it is they prefer, they just do it. Whereas a new soul may not be used to the way things work here as much, and they may need a little bit of help or guidance and say, okay, I'm going to use, a divination system to put myself in touch with my spirit guides because I don't really yet believe that from this particular physical incarnation, I can just do it automatically. So I need a crystal ball, or I need tea leaves, or I need tarot cards, or I need crystals, or I need something that aligns with my belief system and makes it seem easier for me to give myself permission to expand my abilities. But again, eventually it's like, but if I'm expanding my abilities because I believe I need the crystal to do so, you finally realize, but I'm still the one expanding my abilities. Why do I need the crystal? So, yes, it's fine to use that, and it can be a creative and artistic way to get in touch with things. Ultimately, yeah, a being may realize that they've gotten to a point where if I need to contact my guide, I just contact my guide. I don't need a tarot card or a tea leaf or a crystal ball to do so. Those are intermediary permission slips. I just know that I can give myself permission just to do it directly now. I don't need the middleman, so to speak.
Merrill, where can people find you? What's next? What's coming up? And include Conscious Life Expo in there.
Yeah, well, of course, like you said, they can always go to bashar.org to find out any event that we're doing that's coming up. And in Conscious Life Expo, yes, on Sunday the 22nd, I will be doing a channeling. Bashar will be channeling. Now, I believe this is sold out. He's from 8 to 9:30. I think they're saying that Sunday night is sold out, and that's why we're doing also a Monday night from 8 to 9:30, where Bashar is channeling. But on that Monday at 11 a.m., I will also, as myself, be doing a workshop that will be dealing with exploring negative beliefs and facing challenges and how to transform them into something more positive. So I'll be taking people through that particular information with slides and so on and so forth, so they can really, over the course of a couple of hours, really lock into what Bashar is talking about, how to let go of negative beliefs, what they're for, how to look at them, how to face challenges in a more constructive and positive way. I'm starting to do these kinds of class segments as myself because I know that in any 90-minute session that Bashar does, people can get a glimmering of what it is he's talking about. But by spending time really digging down into one concept over a 2-hour period, people can really lock it in and understand it and apply it in their lives and get a beneficial effect. So ultimately, I will be teaching an entire class on that. And that will be advertised on the Bashar.org website when and if that comes up. In the meantime, they can also find me on darylanka.com for other things I'm doing, like books. And they can go to boggledescaperooms.com, which will lead them to an escape room in Calabasas and here in LA that my wife and I own and run as kind of a fun form of entertainment that allows them to team build and explore and solve puzzles. and things like that to really hone their skills at problem solving. So they can find all these things at those particular sites.
Any more Willa books coming out? I mean, I know you are so busy, and now you're on Gaia and Gaiasphere. You're in all these documentaries, being interviewed everywhere, which, bravo, it's perfect timing for us to
Yeah.
have access like that. But Willa, what's happening
Yeah.
with Willa?
I've got the two books, Shards of a Shattered Mirror, based on, a little bit on Willa's life story with a science fiction story woven in. I am slowly working on the third book, but in the meantime, actually, there are two Bashar books, a formula workbook and a larger Bashar book that are going to be published very soon, hopefully within the next year or so by St. Martin's Press. So I have to focus on those books right now, since St. Martin's Press will actually be waiting for them, and we have deadlines for that. So those books will be coming out sometime this year and next year as well.
Bravo, Daryl. Thank you so much for coming back on the show today and for all you're doing right now at this really auspicious time on the planet. Appreciate you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for what you're doing and allowing this kind of portal to be used to disseminate this kind of information for people. So I really appreciate that as well. Thanks, Debbie.
We end today's show with this thought that disclosure isn't something that happens to humanity. It's something that happens through us the moment we choose clarity over fear and embodiment over waiting. This has been Dare to Dream for curious souls connecting with extraterrestrial life, higher dimensions, and ancient shamanic wisdom. Next week on the podcast, I'm interviewing Billy Carson. Be sure to subscribe to this number one transformation conversation and choose big. Go into that space of all things and everything and choose the very best and the very highest.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.